You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome. We're glad you're here. I think you'll be glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of this. It's a great habit to get into each and every night, Monday through Friday. Couple of quick announcements. We are going to tomorrow morning. I will be boarding a plane and headed out to Hollywood for the premiere of Moon Rising, and that means that on Thursday night and Friday night, we are going to do some classic encore presentations. Now, some of you say, oh, I don't want to, if it's not live, I don't want to. Okay, don't listen. But you're going to miss some really, really great shows if you decide to skip. Your choice. But I'll be out there with Ed Grimsley and Jose Escamilla. I will be videotaping some interviews with various people who come to the premiere. We are also going to do some sky watching through the night vision goggles, and I hope to be able to videotape some of that and some interviews with people that attend that. And then on Monday and possibly Tuesday next week, I'll be presenting those to you. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be very interesting. And I'm just grateful to have the opportunity to be able to cover this premiere. I have no idea about the problems that people were having last night trying to listen to and watch the show. I will tell you that I can see right here on the control panel that there is some interference somewhere with our video feed, and it's working, but maybe haltingly in your area. And it was doing that last night. It's done it before. I don't know if we're getting outside help from people who do not believe in the Constitution and do not believe in freedom of speech, or if it's just some problem or anomaly out there on the internet. I don't know. We will try to track it down if it continues, but at the moment, things appear to be working okay, and you should be able to both see and hear the show right at this moment. But if you are encountering problems, if it's intermittent, as it was last night, then please send me email and describe for me exactly what you encountered so I know where to address it. And try to get it fixed, okay? Now, my guest this evening is Kevin Randall. And Kevin Randall is a name that everyone in the UFO community knows. You are familiar with him. And he has been a major voice and a major force in UFO investigation for a number of years, over 30. And we're privileged to have him back with us tonight. It's been a while. He'll join us right after this break. Kevin Randall served in the U.S. Army, and then after that went to college, and then joined the U.S. Air Force Reserves. He's a helicopter pilot. He served in Vietnam in that capacity. He has also served in the capacity of U.S. Air Force Reserve, primarily as an intelligence officer. He has a Ph.D. in psychology. He is a UFO investigator and has been writing and having his books published, many, many books, for over 30 years. It's been a while since he's been with us, but Kevin, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you very much.
I visited your blog today, and it would appear that you have been embroiled in some of the same type of insanity that I have been embroiled in off and on over the past year, where people are just having really strange, emotional, overheated responses to something they imagined you said rather than what you actually said. And I've had that happen several times this year. Actually, I say this year, over the past 12 months. So that goes back into 2008. And I want to ask you about that. But here's what I want to ask. Have you noticed an increase in that kind of stuff over the past few months?
In ufology, not really. I've been embroiled in a lot of little dust-ups for 15 or 20 years. It seems that no matter how carefully you say something, how carefully you choose the word you use to say that, somebody is going to misunderstand what you've said, maybe purposely, and attack you for it. And it's not something that's new. I think that I may have been embroiled in more of them lately simply because of blogging, and now they have an access directly to me.
Blog. Okay. Well, let me add to that question the fact that in addition to me asking it, I've been asked that by other UFO investigators and researchers and writers, the same thing, and I have noticed there's more of it. Now, I really can't say what's the cause of it. Maybe it's because the show continues to grow and the audience is much, much bigger. Or maybe there's something afoot, you know, that's making people go nuts. But, you know, you can come out and say, you know, something as simple as I walked out into a beautiful day with a beautiful blue sky, and someone will rake you over the coals for saying the sky is blue. It's just
because we know scientifically the sky really isn't blue. It's just an optical illusion based on the scattering of light that enters the atmosphere, bouncing off the various atoms and molecules.
So I walked out into a beautiful sunlit day where the sky was not actually blue, but where there was an optical illusion created by the scattering of light. You know, we don't communicate that way. And people.
I'm not sure that we're getting more of it now in ufology. Maybe we are, but I have noticed that there are people that just, no matter what you say and how carefully you say it, that's not what they want to hear. But they're gonna turn it around somehow and use it to attack you. And I've been involved in some of this for the last 18 months. There's been some really nasty stuff going out. I'm going to be a subject of an audit by some accounting firm to see how many mistakes I might have made in the UFO books, or somebody's going to call the Pentagon to talk about me to my superiors at the Pentagon. And I think the latest nonsense is the FBI is going to call me a liar because I said FBI agents threatened to kill people if they talked about what they knew about Roswell. And actually what I'd said in the book was simply that the witness reported to me that he had been told that if they talked out of turn, the FBI might do away with them. So I wasn't saying that. I was reporting what was said. But these fine distinctions aren't being made anymore. People are just hearing what they want to hear and reacting to that rather than what is actually being said or what is being written.
So true, so true. And I am quite certain some of the psychos we'll do it again as a result of tonight's show. I have noticed there's more of it hitting us. You're so right. People will write to me and put in quotes something I said, and you go back and listen to it, play the recording of it, and that isn't what I said, but they have it in quotes. You know.
Let me put a positive spin on this.
Let's do it.
Positive spin is that more people are interested in UFOs and the paranormal now than were 15 months ago. So we're getting a much larger audience than we had, and the new people coming into it may not have been as well versed in the etiquette of discussing these things. How's that?
Well, it sounds good. Sounds like something that a guy with a doctor's degree in psychology would say. here's the deal, though. I think I'm seeing this spread all through our society. People aren't thinking rationally and discussing rationally much of anything. And I see what happens in the UFO community as sort of a microcosm. But it's happening in everything. They're just shrill about name it. But let's move beyond that and talk about
it. Let's expand it for a moment and just say, if you watch any of the so-called reality programs on MTV where you have the young people involved in whatever they're doing, they have a sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't buy into that sense of entitlement, then they react poorly toward you. And maybe that's part of it as well. The society is becoming more shrill.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to grow up or collapse. That's what's going to happen. They either have to grow up and live in the real world or collapse. Because the rest of the world is not impressed nor intimidated. All right. Let's talk about this, probably the thing that people probably remember most is anything that you've said or anything that you've written having to do with Roswell or Project Mogul or anything around that. But there was a significant event that took place in Levelland, Texas, back in the 1950s. And you've investigated that some. And you've researched that some. And it's not one that we've heard much about. And I'd like for us to delve into that a bit. One of the things that interested me about that is one of the witnesses was the sheriff. And by all accounts, sheriff, I think his name was Clem.
Where Clem?
Yeah. Sheriff Clem had the reputation of being really solid, high integrity, not afraid to enforce the law, no matter who was involved. And he was one of the witnesses. And that's one of the things that really got my attention, because of my background, having been a deputy sheriff and then international police officer. The sort of new information that has come out about what happened to him and it kind of shows that maybe there was some pressure applied to him, maybe. But let's talk about that. Tell us about this Levelland, Texas event.
I have to remember it took place in November of 1957, It was about a month after the first Sputnik was launched in October, and I think the stuff started to happen on the night of the second launch, but before the news media had really picked up on it. And what happened was people in the panhandle of area of Texas, around Lubbock, Texas, Levelland is not all that far from Lubbock, would see an object in the sky. If it got close to them, the car engine would stop, the lights would dim, the radio would fade away, and as the object moved away from them, the car began operating properly again. Now, we have witnesses in 13 separate locations around the Lubbock area that talked about this happening. Some guys in a combine working the fields. They had two combines working side by side. The object approached. Both of them stopped. Both of them had the same problems. Car engines in lots of different places around the Levelland area. Some of the people talked to or called the sheriff's department, asked them about it. Sheriff and one of his deputies went out to look at it. The object was the object was described as torpedo shaped or egg shaped, and I'm thinking that if you take a look at a sort of a torpedo shaped object, and we've seen those tanks along farm roads where they're filled with fertilizer and all that stuff, the tanks, and depending on the angle you see it, especially at night, it's going to look like it's changing its shape. It's really not. It's just the angle that the person is viewing it. So I think when we get the discrepancy in descriptions, there's a logical explanation for it, and it's a perceptual problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if you have one that is oval-shaped, and if it's far enough out and low enough toward the horizon, it can look like a cigar shape.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So I think when the skeptical community, the debunkers pointed and said, well, the object was changing its shape. Well, no, it really wasn't. It was merely the perception of the person who reported it, and they're reporting as best they can what it looked like on this night.
Mm-hmm.
People reported it to the sheriff. The sheriff finally goes out to look for it. What we've heard in the past all along was that the sheriff did see this bright red light the distance, but he never got close. Don Burleson, who actually lives in Roswell by coincidence, and Levelland's about hours from Roswell, had gone over there to look into some of this, try to find out if there were any new witnesses, and talked to the sheriff's daughter, since she passed away, talked to some other witnesses, and got this story that the sheriff actually got a lot closer than he ever said, and his experienced the same sort of electromagnetic effects.
Mm-hmm.
And that when the Air Force came to investigate, they suggested that he not tell people exactly what he want to be a little bit more circumspect.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a story, and Don Burleson talks about this as well, that the sheriff had gone out to a ranch not that far from Levelland the next day where there was a burned circular area on the ground where the object apparently had touched down. So now there's physical evidence. But what's important about the Levelland case is we have a lot of witnesses, separate locations, not having an opportunity to compare notes before they talk to the sheriff. We have law enforcement, sheriff and his deputy seeing it up close. We have, I think, the other law enforcement individuals, state police, highway patrolmen who see it. There's a fire marshal who sees the object. These are people who are very credible. We have now physical evidence on the ground. So we have multiple chains of evidence, if you will, from eyewitness testimony, object interacting with the environment, and leaving traces of it behind. Now, when the Air Force investigate, they send a single NCO in to talk to two or three people. And the Air Force policy in 1957 was if we didn't talk to the witnesses, they didn't exist. Even though 20 years, 30 years later, as I'm going through the Air Force files and I'm going through the documentation, I can identify actually people at 13 separate locations or 14 separate locations. The Air Force only found three. They issue a press release against Don Kehoe, who was the director of the National Investigations on Aerial Phenomena, UFO organization, who said there were at least nine witnesses. And the Air Force said, well, that's not true. There weren't nine witnesses. There were only three. Well, the Air Force is right at one point. There weren't nine witnesses. There were actually more than that. So Kehoe was wrong, but he was conservative in his estimate.
Well, he may have been wrong, but he was closer to right than they were when they said there were three.
Doesn't matter. He said there were only nine, and there were actually lots more than nine. So no wins on that one. But the real point is, what we see from this investigation is the Air Force at that point didn't care what the truth was. They just wanted to write the thing off. They came up with this preposterous idea that maybe it was ball lightning. A ball lightning is something, a phenomenon that is so rare that scientists, until the 1990s, were arguing whether or not it really existed. So if nothing else at Levelland, and we had ball lightning in that sort of an environment, we've got a major scientific breakthrough that proves that UFO research would do some good. But, of course, ball lightning is a ridiculous explanation, and ball lightning is a very short-lived phenomenon, so you wouldn't have people all over Panhandle of Texas seeing this thing and reporting it over a period of hours. Ball lightning is small, might last for 60 seconds, if that long, and usually pops out of existence with an audible pop when it goes, but it's usually pretty small. So Levelland is a case that provides us with an opportunity to study it in a scientific arena. Unfortunately, we're now talking about a case that's 50 years old. Had the research been done properly back in 1957 or 58, we might not be having this discussion about whether UFOs are extraterrestrial craft. We'd have a much better idea of what was going on.
All right, now, we've got about 2.5 minutes here until we hit our next break. So let me ask you this. The additional information that was gained by additional. I mean, there was some information from the sheriff himself, but it was sort of very little information that went public. But additional information came from his daughter. And in that information, she said that her dad had told the family about, you know, that the car went dead. He tried to get close to it, and the car went dead. That would mean he was very close to it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I think in the original reports, he said he got within 900 yards of it. But he talked about seeing it more or less in the distance. Under the new investigation that Don Burleson was talking about and talking to the sheriff's daughter, he told family members he got close enough that it stalled his car engine, it dimmed his headlights. And what this means is now we have another couple of witnesses, the sheriff and the deputy in the car with him are additional witnesses. So now we're up to people at 14 different locations who saw it, and we don't know what the other law enforcement officers, how close they may have gotten to it rather than seeing the streak of red in the distance, but actually may have gotten closer to it. And we're cautioned not to talk publicly about everything that they had seen. And I think if you look back at 1957 and even into some of today's environments, I think if government authorities came to you and said, you know, this is a national security, we really like you not to talk about it, I think the majority of people would say, okay, that's good. I'm on board with that. And the news media, of course, would have chased the story down now. But in 1957, not so much. And if you're talking UFOs, the national media would probably ignore it, as they have so often.
Yeah. Yeah, or they would poo-poo this thing. I personally was involved in a situation where me and my family saw up close a UFO, and I mean up close. This was back in the 1990s, probably around 1991, 92. And it was coming from the southwest and headed toward the northeast. And we saw it. It could not have been, I don't think it was more than 800 feet high. And it was just hovering. And the next day, they were joking about this. There was a little wide spot in the road down in that southwest direction called Four Corners. And so they were joking on the news about it and said, four folks in Four Corners saw aliens. And they were laughing about it. And then a talk show was talking about it and sort of making a joke of it. And I called in and I said, well, look, those four folks down in Four Corners are for real, because there's five of us that saw it, and we were not in Four Corners, but it was coming from that direction. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Kevin Randall. Kevin, we were talking about this. I had just used the example of this thing that me and my family experienced, where we saw it, and we saw it up close. And this was daylight. This was not a nighttime sighting, just lights in the sky. We saw it. And then the news is just making fun of it. Now, you know, one of the things that I've always wondered about is, and this is shifting gears a little bit, this goes over to Roswell. You know, when after the Roswell incident, and the newspapers carried the press release, and then came back with the, you know, Ramey held the press conference and invited some reporters in, and pictures were taken, and Jesse Marcel was there. And we've all seen those photographs. And General Ramey says, sorry, boys, it was just misidentified. It was a weather balloon. Here's what has always bothered me. You know, there's not a single reporter that spoke up and said, now, hang on just a minute. Marcel, you are the air intelligence officer for the only atomic-armed, nuclear-armed wing on the planet. You're the air intelligence officer. How is it that you don't know the difference between a weather balloon and a UFO or a flying saucer? How is it that you can't identify a weather balloon and you're the air intelligence officer for this nuclear armed wing, the only one on the planet? They didn't ask that. And you know, as I watch the news, the major media today, and watch the sort of inanity that they engage in, I don't think they would ask that today.
I think in today's environment, they don't want to look like they're silly. So, not a topic that a lot of people make fun of. So they're going to fall into that category because it's much easier to make fun of something than take it seriously. What strikes me as interesting is that right after the Kenneth Arnold sighting, which is about 2 weeks before the Roswell crash, we begin to see the ridicule factor already applied because there's a paper headline, and I remember this specifically, where it says, flying saucers seen in 38 states except Kansas. Kansas is a dry state, implying that people who UFOs were a bunch of drunks. And the other thing that we've had to fight the whole time is this idea that the only people who see flying saucers are the guys wearing bib overalls with three come from the backwood. But if you take a look, what you find is the longer the object is right, higher the educational level of the reported, more likely it's going to be unidentified. In other words, the educated people who report flying saucers have had a good look at them, and they're like you. They know what they saw. They know it doesn't fit a conventional explanation. And there's one other point I want to make. When we began to publicize some of the Roswell stuff, we went to visit the Chicago Tribune, and the person who interviewed us, the reporter who interviewed us, was a intern, and she was she was in the middle of her college education, and she said to us at that point that the editors don't believe this, therefore it's not true. So it doesn't matter what the evidence is. It doesn't matter what we could prove. The editors didn't believe it, therefore it was not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it runs the other way, too. If the editors believe something, no matter how untrue it is, it becomes true. And I've seen that happen. When I was in Kosovo before the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia, And I was liaison between the international community and the Serb police. And a reporter from one of the major agencies came to the office and said, we've got a report that there are about 4,500 Albanian civilians on foot trying to come across the these mountains here, and they're headed this way, and they're fleeing from the Serb army. Well, this was in the middle of a blizzard. I mean, a real blizzard. And I said, I have no reports of that, but let's check. So I went down to the police station, checked with the police commander. He had heard nothing about it. He called around, and he called to stations across the mountains, and they had not heard of it. And she was insistent. So I said, well, okay, let's go. And we got in my vehicle and went across the fields and up through the pass in the Chachevita Mountains. And just as you drop down on the other side where these people, it was the only place they could possibly have come through. And just as you drop down on the other side of the mountains, there was a home. And it happened to be an Albanian family. And I stopped and asked. I told the man what the rumor was. And I asked, have you seen any people on foot? Now, there's fresh snow everywhere. This man was out picking up firewood. He started chuckling, and he said, why, sure, they came right through here. And just shook his head and chuckled and went back inside. He was just being facetious. That night, so we had just confirmed that this was not a true story, right? That night.
But you've actually confirmed it's true because the guy said he saw it.
Well, that night on the news, and I watched it on satellite television, this major news agency reported, we have unconfirmed reports that there are 4,500 Albanian civilians trudging through the snow in a fierce Balkan blizzard trying to escape from the Serb army. And in fact, we had confirmed it was not true. And but the, you know, when I see those kinds of things, I know those kinds of things are done in the news. And that's why I say, if you see it in American media, divide it by 100, and you might be down near something similar to the truth.
Well, I think one of the other thing is, they often say, according to published reports, is if this somehow gives it an authority,
yeah,
credibility, because it's a published report. Well, I saw in the Weekly World News that Bill Clinton met with aliens. So I can now report, according to published reports, we know that the Weekly World News was making the crap up, but it's a published report. Does that make it credible because it's been published? I think not, and that's the problem we run into. We don't have good sources. According to published reports, according to unidentified sources, highly placed, well, who are these people, and how do we know they're highly placed? How do we know you're not making it up? And in fact, I was talking to a reporter one day about a trial they were having near here, and he was quoting from a courtroom observer, and the courtroom observer was another reporter, and what they were doing was giving each other quotes for their newscast so that they could say, well, so somebody at the trial said blah, 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 but it was another reporter just inventing the news for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that happen. I saw a reporter for a major news agency standing in front of the camera, filed his report for what went on in Kosovo that day, and then said his name, reporting for such and such agency, Pristina, Kosovo. Well, it just so happened that I recognized exactly where he was standing. He was not even in Kosovo. He was standing in front of the Alexander Palace Hotel in Skopje, Macedonia.
Well, when I was in Iraq, we had the same thing. I'd be standing in our tactical operations center, and we were watching the satellite feeds of the news media from the United States, and they'd be telling us what's going on, and I'd say, what in the hell are they talking about? I'm here. I never saw that.
Yeah.
Crying out loud. Yeah. And the one I liked was Ted Koppel. He's in Baghdad, and he's showing this puddle of sewage bubbling up in a school. He's saying, you know, look what the conditions the poor children have to go to school. And I says, great, we fixed 1,200 schools in Baghdad, and this clown finds the one we haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah. For those of us who have been there.
1,200 schools.
For those of us who have been there, out there, away from here, we know for sure that the American media is feeding the American public junk. And so as frustrated as I get with some of the nonsense that I hear back from other Americans sometimes, as frustrated as I get with it, I understand why they're giving that back. That's all they know. That's what they've been told. And I tell people all the time, if you want to know what is actually happening in the world, you better get your news from outside of America, because you're not going to get the straight story here. And that applies there are exceptions to that. Not many, but there are some. But it applies in great measure to anything having to do with UFOs as well. UFOs are actually taken very seriously by our government, even though the official stance is they're not interested. They have actually published an official document that admits that UFOs are real and that they exist. It's called Project Blue Book. And they dismiss and debunk most of them, but they ended up with over 700 they could not explain, and said so. That makes them unidentified flying objects.
Because actually, take a look at the Project Blue Book files. They've labeled an awful lot of them as insufficient data for a scientific analysis. It means they haven't explained it, but it's not included in the 700 that they say are unidentified.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if you've got the time of day, you've got the location, you've got a direction, then you have the scientific information that you need to make a proper investigation. You know who the witnesses are, you know when it happened, you can make a scientific... And yet, they say, well, it was insufficient data for a scientific analysis. So there's 4,000 of those in the project files, which means like 35 or 40% of the cases really aren't identified, and I'm not even counting the ones where they put explanations on them that are ludicrous.
Yeah.
Clearly could possibly be.
But see, it doesn't get reported that way, and that isn't the way the media responds to the information from Blue Book. They respond to the information of it was swamp gas, it was ball lightning, it was a weather balloon, and they say, it was all explained away. No, very little of it actually was explained away. And as you say, thousands of them could not be explained. And that is an official admission that they unidentified flying objects exist and they are real. And here are some that we could not identify. And
also as interesting is the Condon Committee, the Air Force-sponsored University of Colorado investigation of UFOs. And if you read the executive summary, which Condon wrote, he says, well, there's nothing to it. There's no threat to national security. But if you go back and you read the entire report, you find out that a third of the cases weren't explained. They have no explanation for them. And one of them they explained, and this just always has cracked me up, is as a phenomenon so rare, never been seen before or since. Gee whiz, that could be an alien spacecraft, couldn't it?
It could be. It could be. Now, what is your rank in the Air Force?
Well, actually, I'm in the Army now.
You're in the Army now again, okay.
I'm back in the Army. I went from the Army to the Air Force, back to the Army. I'm in the Army National Guard. I'm a major, and I'll be retiring in May as a lieutenant colonel.
All right. I asked you this on the previous show, but we have lots of new listeners that didn't get in on that, so let me ask you again. Have you run into any kind of obstacles or any problems from the military for your work as a UFO investigator?
Not at all. Because I was an intelligence officer, both in the Air Force and when I went to Iraq, I served as an intelligence officer. I was required to have a top secret clearance.
Okay, let's get the rest of that when we come back from this break. I didn't watch the clock. It sneaked up on us and it's taking over. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, and my guest is Kevin Randall. Kevin, when we got cut off by the break, I had just asked you if you've ever run into any kind of obstacles or interference in your military career as a result of being a UFO investigator and writer.
And the short answer is no. In fact, when I first got into the Air Force, and I was stationed down at Richards Gabauer Air Force Base outside of Kansas City, and I was going on the orientation with this, a captain showing me around, and somehow we got off on UFOs. And he said, I was reading this interesting article, and he was describing it to me. He says, yeah, I know, I wrote that. And so that happened a couple of times, articles that he was discussing I had actually written. But I had no trouble getting my top secret clearances, either then or now. And I know that because I've been on some national TV programs, I'm a little bit better known. The only thing that is weird is my military record, parts of it seem to have disappeared. And when they were looking for it as I was moving into the National Guard to take over the role as a battalion intelligence officer, they couldn't find it, and they were told that the NSA was holding my records, and nobody knows why.
Okay. Interesting that your audio just went dead as you said that. We did hear it, but then you went dead. Now, let me ask you this. Does that worry you in any way?
Not at all.
Okay.
I've gotten my promotions like I'm supposed to. There hasn't seemed to be any adverse effect in my career. I'm going to be thrown out of the Guard here in May simply because I reached the critical age, and I don't fit for any of the qualifications to extend my service. I'm not eligible for any of those. So, but that happens to a lot of other guys as well. It's not just me. So there you go.
Now, you hear that echo? They could do a better job if they wanted to. They don't have to have that echo. But let me say to those who are causing the echo, welcome. We're glad to have you. I like listeners wherever we get them. Kevin, let's go back to Levelland, Texas for a moment. Is this an important event? This was a pretty major sighting, wasn't it?
In 1957, it was a major sighting, and it sort of marked the beginning of that whole wave of sightings in 1957. It peaked 4 days later, and you can see it building slowly toward that. But Levelland kind of marks the national interest.
Okay, now for folks who don't know this, Levelland is named very aptly because that part of Texas is as flat as you can possibly imagine land being. You can see in every direction forever. It is absolutely flat out there in the panhandle of Texas. So some of these witnesses could have been quite a distance away. What was the farthest away that you came across?
The only witnesses that were very far away in the initial investigation seemed to be the sheriff and his deputy, and we now know that really isn't quite true. But the witnesses we talked to, the important witnesses, were within 100, 150 yards of this, that far away from it. Close enough to call their car engine, to dim their lights, to cause the radio to fade. When it took off, then the automobiles began to work properly, but it was that close, and they got a good look at it. They knew what it was. It was not weather balloon. It was not ball lightning. It wasn't any of the other ridiculous explanations. It wasn't a case of mass hysteria, but to have mass hysteria, you've got to have some kind of communications amongst all these people, and they were calling the sheriff's office or other places independently, and there was no media attention to it. So it's a very important case simply because of that.
All right. Now, how many of those 13, how many of those original witnesses are still alive today?
Well, when we say 13, I'm saying witnesses at 13 different locations. There's more than, in one case, there were four people.
In one case,
there were two people at the location. So we're talking about 35 or 40 witnesses. We're talking about an event that took place 50 years ago. So we've lost a large number of those witnesses. I just read the other day, Pedro Sacito, who was one of the first people to start it and all about it. Unfortunately, his name is spelled like the beginning of saucer, so there was always the people were poking fun of that. I had read not too long ago that he had passed away. The recent past, so we've lost him and some of the others that way.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff, of course, has died since well.
To our listeners, let me say that you need to know that the interference you're hearing on the telephone is not because of Kevin Randall using a cell phone. He's not. He's using a landline. And prior to going on the air, this was a rock-solid connection. I make no accusations or conjectures. I just want to say that it shows all the signs of someone who does not believe in the First Amendment right of freedom of speech. I could be wrong about that, but based on our experience, it would seem to me to be that. It would seem to me to be possible, let me put it that way. Kevin, what do you think? Now, we don't get into politics here, but where politicians touch the genre we talk about, we do kind of discuss that a little bit, but not actual politics. But we've got a new president now, and he's got some people around him that are known to be at least somewhat in favor of UFO disclosure. What do you suspect will happen with that? Do you think, and let me add to the mix, that they're getting lots and lots of names on petitions saying, please do UFO disclosure. They're getting a lot of letters and faxes saying that, all addressed to our new president. But now that we have a new president, and all of that is happening, what do you suspect will be the response? Do you think that there will be UFO disclosure?
No, I don't. And the reason I don't is because, if you remember, Jimmy Carter, when he was elected president, he promised disclosure, and he'd seen a UFO himself. He wanted to know what was going on. We got nothing out of him. We got nothing out of Ronald Reagan. We got nothing out of the first George Bush. We got nothing out of Bill Clinton other than to say that he'd asked about Roswell and couldn't find out anything about it. So I don't see why the new president will be any different. I just don't see it working. I've heard this 30 years. We're on the verge of disclosure. It's going to happen at any moment, and it never does.
All right, now, we've got time for a short answer on this. Why is there such secrecy, in your opinion?
I have no idea. I cannot think of a real reason that they would want to bury the knowledge that we're not alone in the universe. I cannot think of why they'd want to do it. Something they saw at Roswell, something that happened at Roswell, caused them to bring down the curtain on this thing, and they have not lifted it since that point. And I confess, I cannot figure out what it would be.
Yeah, it really baffles me, and I've asked that question. So what if we're not alone in the universe? So what? Big deal. So what? I think the polls show, opinion polls, that the majority of people think that we are not alone in the universe. That doesn't mean that the majority of people have seen an extraterrestrial. It doesn't mean that they think that extraterrestrials have made some kind of contact with us. But the majority think we are not alone in the universe. And if we already think that's the fact, if we think that's the case, then being told that that's true I don't think would cause chaos.
I think they look at it from the point of view of the 1938 broadcast by Orson Welles, and they're still locked in the 1930s. In 1947, that might have been a legitimate argument. Well, we don't want to have panic, but not in 2009. I mean, we've been exposed to all of this sort of thing. NASA announced that they had found evidence of life on Mars. Well, if there's life on Mars, then there's probably life scattered throughout the universe. I mean, if it developed twice in our solar system, it's going to develop anywhere it can, and there's an awful lot of it out there. And I know of no theologian who tells us that if you've got life on other planets, and that somehow lessens the power of God or anything else. It just doesn't seem to be a good reason for it. I just don't know what it would be.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be into our second hour. And I'll open the telephone line so you can call in with your questions and your comments for Kevin Randall. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Kevin Randall. Kevin, before we get into the opening up the phone lines for everybody, I want to put a picture up on the screen on our internet TV station. People can see it. It's a picture of you sitting on, it looks like a stack of bricks, sand-colored bricks, and you're in your uniform. And you have your weapon across your lap. Tell us about this.
Well, actually, that's me at Babylon, and I'm in the throne room. I'm sitting up actually on the platform where the throne supposedly sat, and that's the place where Daniel saw the handwriting on the wall. But while we were in Baghdad, they were talking about transferring one of our companies down into the Babylon area. I went down with the company commander, and while he was discussing the logistics of moving his soldiers down into that area, a number of us went and toured Babylon, saw the ancient city of Babylon, and we asked them where the Hanging Gardens were, and they thought that they might have actually been up in the Mosul area as opposed to down around Babylon. It was quite fascinating. So we had an opportunity to see one of the ancient cities of the world while we were there.
So where you are seated is actually the where the throne would have been.
Yes.
And that would have been the throne of, Nebuchadnezzar, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
That's literally where Daniel saw the handwriting on the wall. And we saw the gate of Ishtar, and we saw the... there's actually a fenced-off area, which is one of the roads from that time, from thousands of years ago, a road that five till this day. Quite a fascinating opportunity. And then as we were leaving the area, there were a bunch of Iraqi merchants outside the gate selling stuff, and I wanted to take a picture of the two guys because they were wearing Dallas Cowboys jackets. So
they should have been wearing Arizona Cardinal jackets. You see, the Cardinals are the Steelers, because those are the guys going to the Super Bowl.
Yes, but this was back in 2000.
Oh, that's right. That's back when Dallas still had a football team. I'm sorry. Now, I'm going to get a lot of bad email out of Dallas over that, but the truth is I was raised
in
Dallas.
They've had their problems in the last couple of years.
You gotta admit it. That's the truth. All right, the telephone line is open for our audience. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. If you have a question or a comment, should I call you Dr. Randall or Major Randall or Kevin Randall? What do you want to be called?
Well, you could call me Kevin because, you know, you should be familiar with that name.
I am indeed. Okay, the telephone line is open, and if you have a question or comment for Kevin Randall, don't hesitate to give us a call. Kevin, I don't know if you've done much research into this, but I want to get your thoughts on it because it's a hot topic all around this planet, and that is 2012, the upcoming end of the Mayan calendar. And there are lots and lots of people who are really focused on that. Some people are very fearful. Some people think, man, not much is going to happen. I've had a couple of guests who said the reason the Mayan calendar ends at December 21st, 2012 is they just ran out of rocks. And they don't put much stock in it. But and I'm not, I don't know if you've done much research on that, but what are your thoughts on this 2012 thing?
If you remember back in 1999, everything was going to go to hell in a handbasket because computers were set up with 99 and they wouldn't be able to figure out that we were in 2000 and it would reset and there'd be all this chaos throughout the world because the computer, all the computers would crash. I thought, well, gee whiz, I'll just set my computer back to 1990 and we'll have another 10 years of goodness here. But I don't know. How many times have we heard that the world's going to end? I'm more concerned with that asteroid that's supposed to hit, and was it 2039?
Mm-hmm.
That's more concerned to me. I just don't know that we need to get too worried about it, and I think it's interesting, it's fascinating. But I'm sort of like the people, well, that was all the further they carried it out because that was all the further they cared to project it. And if they were around today, they might carry it out another, I forget what the cycle is, 26,000 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I forget what their cycle was, but they might have projected it on into the future as they got closer to 2012. I just don't know.
Well, I want to invite you to be a part of my 2012 party. And I'm quite serious about this. I intend, for December the 21st, 2012, I intend to be in Bangkok hosting a party for all of the audience who cares to go with me to Bangkok. And the reason I want to be in Bangkok is because Bangkok is one fabulous city, and the food is fabulous, and it's not all that expensive. It's a great, great place to go have a 2012 party. But we're going to broadcast live from the party as December the 21st, 2012, dawns. And it should be at 10 a.m. GMT. So as that hour dawns, we're going to be broadcasting. Now, the reason for that is, if something terrible is going to happen, we'll all find out about it at the same time. But we'll go out happy because we've had this party. If nothing happens, we'll all find out about that at the same time. And we can celebrate that we lived through it. So I don't know. Have you ever been to Bangkok?
No, when I was in Vietnam, I took my RR to Australia.
Yeah, boy, that's a great place. Where did you go? Did you go to Darwin or Melbourne or Sydney?
Well, we went to Darwin and then we went on to Sydney.
Did you have a chance to go to the Hog's Breath restaurant there in Darwin?
No, the airplane just landed in Darwin and they got on and they sprayed stuff around there so we wouldn't contaminate Australia, I guess, with our Vietnamese germs, and then we went on to Sydney. So
uh-huh.
I've been to Darwin, but on the airplane, and I didn't get off the airplane. It's kind of like when we went to Barack, the airplane landed in Rome, but they wouldn't let us off the airplane.
If you ever get a chance to do Darwin, there's lots of neat stuff there in Darwin. But all over Australia, it's just a fabulous country. It's paradise.
Well, there's a lot of neat stuff in Iraq, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, look, in Iraq, when you're in Babylon, you're in Mesopotamia. That's the ancient name for that area. That means the land between the two rivers. And this is the area of the Sumerians, the ancient Sumerian civilization, and the ancient Akkadian civilization. Did you have any opportunity to see any of those old ancient artifacts from those civilizations?
Just what they had at Babylon. And we were lucky to get down there to see Babylon. There were other places I wanted to go, and we just couldn't. I mean, you can't risk the lives of like a dozen guys to set up a convoy so you can go on a sightseeing tour.
Yeah.
They just didn't let you do that. But the other interesting thing is we're driving down this six-lane highway that runs from Kuwait up to Baghdad, and you're looking out over this landscape that probably hasn't changed since the time of the Bible, and you're seeing these little houses that look like they're right out of the Bible, and on top of each one is this satellite dish.
Oh, my. Yeah, I have not been to Iraq, but I have seen things similar to what you've just described. In other parts of the world, you see a house that's older than our country, and there'll be a satellite dish on it. You know, it just doesn't seem to fit, but it that's the way it is. All right, now, when you were over in Iraq, you know, we hear a lot of stories here in the United States. We those of us who follow what's going on with UFOs, we hear a lot of stories about people seeing UFOs in Iraq, in Iran, in Turkey. Did you run into any of that over there? Did you either see any or run into people that said they had?
Not at all. It was the same thing in Vietnam. I mean, heard lots of stories that people said things were going on, but I never saw anything myself or ran into anything myself. And I was hooked into some of the various intelligence reporting networks while we were in Iraq, so I had an opportunity to see some of the secret stuff that was going on. And I just never saw anything cross any of those areas at all, which is not to say it didn't go on and not to say it wasn't reported. It's just I never ran into any of it.
I don't know if you can tell us this, but I'm going to ask it, and you have to determine whether you can answer it. Let's say that we're in, it doesn't matter, any theater of operation that the U.S. military is in, and military personnel see an unidentified, an unknown object in the sky, and they report it. How would they report it? Do they just write a written report and give it to their commanding officer, or is there some special channel that has to go through? How does that happen?
I would assume it would be like any other spot intelligence report, and it would operate the same way, or what they call the salute report, which is a way of reporting things that you see. It's usually geared to enemy movements and that sort of thing, but I would imagine that if you had a UFO sighting, you would use the same channels to report that, and it would go out over the various networks for other intelligence officers and other people to see. So that would be my guess as to how it would work. And as I say, I was plugged into some of that stuff, and I never saw anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my job was to look at stuff like that, not necessarily UFO stuff, but to look for stuff on these various channels. So, and had something about a UFO come through, naturally it would have caught my attention. And I would have followed up on it. But I just never saw anything like that. And I think a lot of it is when you're in that environment, you're more focused on other things on a day-to-day basis. You're more interested in what's going to help you stay alive and what information do we need to stay alive, as opposed to which in the United States we can look at that. That's very interesting stuff. In Iraq, you know, that other things that really kind of gather our attention. So I just never saw anything like that. I would imagine if you saw something like that and felt the need to report it, gone through the normal reporting channels, and I popped up somewhere and I would have seen it.
Now, how many years have you been in one branch of the military or the other? All together.
I think 29 is what it says on the pay stub.
Okay. All right. Now, in all of that time, have you ever come across any UFO-type reports, whether they use the term UFO or some other term? Have you
ever? Yeah, when I was in the Air Force, I'd see those periodically, certainly. But they were nothing spectacular. It was just the kind of stuff that you'd expect. A flight crew would see something that they could not identify. They would report it through the channels, and it would pop up on some of the briefings that we would see. You know, just standard stuff. It's just nothing spectacular. You know, they saw this object, it paced them for this long, it went away, it didn't cause any trouble, we waved, and that was the end of it. But I saw, in the Air Force, I saw some of that stuff periodically. Not frequently, but I'd see it once in a while.
Was it, when one of these reports would come across, was it given any special attention?
No. Usually it would come through, we would have classified reports. And you're familiar with this, you know, the paragraph tells you whether it's classified or not and what level of classification it is. And in the UFO reports I saw, it was always unclassified. It may be incorporated in a classified report, but that particular part of it was unclassified, so they didn't pay any special attention to it. It was sort of, you know, here's something interesting that we don't see every day, and they would pass it forward that way.
Fair enough. All right, let me say again for our audience, the telephone line is open. If you're in Canada or the United States, please give us a call at 623-237-3814. If you're outside of the U.S. and you're outside of Canada, use our flash message feature. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see the link on the site for flash messages, and just click that link. I tell you what, I just did something really dumb and cut off our guest. So let me get him back on the line. I punched the wrong button. You know, I do this every once in a while. I really don't know why, but I get confused and push the wrong button. Trying to bring a caller online and push the wrong button on the wrong piece of equipment. So, let's. I apologize. It's a pilot error, Kevin. I cut you off.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Gary from Nebraska.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, interesting show tonight.
Well, thank you, sir.
Really enjoying it. I wanted to ask Kevin Randall, when he retires from the service, does he have any plans to do further investigations, or will he pursue some other avenue?
What about that, Kevin? What do you plan once you retire? You going full-time into UFO investigation, or what?
But when I retire, the government's going to send me money every month, which I think is a real fine deal. I don't have to do anything. I have an opportunity to do this on a more full-time basis. So I'll continue to march and look into stuff. So I'll continue the investigations, yes.
Okay. Does that answer your question there, Gary?
Well, it does. And thank you for having Kevin on the show as a guest. Appreciate it and enjoying the show, as I said.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Good night.
All right. I want to get to the flash messages that have come in. We've got one from New Zealand, and it says, this is from Dave in New Zealand. He says, I used to work for TV News, Kevin, and I know just what you're talking about. We used to film items just in case the newsroom needed a story. News creation, as it is commonly called, and they're selling it, and to hell with the truth. I am not sure that some of the people I worked with knew what that word truth meant. So there you go. Somebody from the inside.
One of my favorite stories, I knew a news sportscaster, and he quit. He just got incensed and quit one day because I wanted him to do a sports story about the blind bowler. He says, okay, that sounds great. And he said, well, you got to go find one. Somebody in the news department said, oh, a story about blind bowler would be a good thing to have. and but there was no blind bowler. It was, we're going to go out and create the news, see if we can find a blind bowler we can talk about.
Wow. All right, here's one from Germany, from Harry. It says, for me to ask you, why we can see barracks at Babylon on Google Earth? Actually, there are lots of them.
See, barracks?
Yeah.
Well, Babylon was a military installation when I was there. I mean, there was a lot of military around it, and the ancient city, of course, is surrounded by a high wall and all of this thing, but if you take a look around, and I know Saddam Hussein did the same thing. He had a big stadium built there at Babylon so they could do programming and plays and things like that. So there's a military presence at Babylon, but it doesn't aid well the ancient city in that area. It's all around that. So you would be able, yeah, you'd be able to see that from
Google Earth. Yeah. All right, 623-237-3814. Kevin, you've been interested in UFOs for a long, long time. And you've done lots of investigations of lots and lots of UFO sightings. You've written a lot of books about it. What to you would be, what seems to you to be the most significant UFO incident that you've ever looked into?
Really have to ask that question?
It's too late, I did.
Can't figure it out yourself?
Well, I'd like to hear it from you.
Clearly it's the Roswell case.
Okay, why the Roswell case?
Because it set the tone for UFO from that point on.
Yeah, it set the tone for UFO investigation from that point on. Okay. Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Doug from the Alien Agenda on Peltalk. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You're going to have to speak directly into your phone. We can barely hear you.
All righty. I'll speak up a little louder. Doctor, it's very nice to have you on the Kevin Smith Show this evening. I don't know if it's more of a comment or a question here, but essentially the major government is not the ones that we elect in, and until we can get around that, we're not really going to really know the truth about anything, are we?
Okay, just for myself, I want to make sure I understand. You're saying that the government that we elect is not really who's running things, and that we're not ever going to know anything really about UFOs until we can get around that.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I truly believe that, I have a feeling that President Barack Obama has sort of hinted to that in his speech during the inauguration yesterday. And I'll take my answer off the air or any comments regarding that.
All right. Thanks. All right. Kevin, what do you think about that?
Well, I've come across a lot of this stuff that suggests a shadow government, which would be really running the thing, but this gets back into an awful lot of the conspiracy theories about who's running the world and that sort of thing, and I'm not sure how much of that I accept as being grounded in reality. I think there's some evidence that things in Washington aren't quite the way we think they are, but I'm not sure how effective the shadow government is. I mean, if you take a look at it, everybody complained about George Bush bringing in the same people that his father and Ronald Reagan used, but now we have Barack Obama, and he's bringing in the same people that Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton used. So we've got a recycling of the same people and going into maybe not in the same positions, but going into powerful positions. So you kind of wonder about that. Where's all this?
Yeah. Okay, a break is taking over. Let me ask the caller, are you willing to hang on through the break? All right, hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Kevin Randall. We have a caller online who's been holding through the break very patiently. So, caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Howdy. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I had a question for Dr. Randall.
All right.
Okay, I'll just ask it, and then I guess I'll hang up because they'll probably know a lot more about this than I will. Do you have any ideas on who or what's controlling some of these UFOs? And if you have any theories on why we're seeing such an increase in sightings lately. Thanks.
All right, thank you. What about that, Kevin? Any idea who or what is controlling them and why there seems to be an increase in sightings?
If I were, UFOs are being piloted by extraterrestrials.
Your audio's breaking up tremendously. Let's try it again.
Okay, I think that the UFOs are being piloted by extraterrestrials, creatures from other worlds. There are other theories, such as the idea that they're time travelers from Earth's coming back for whatever reason, or interdimensional beings. I subscribe to the extraterrestrial theory. These are other theories. I'm not sure that we see an increase in that, but we see an increase in the reporting, which are two separate things. And I think sometimes when you get topics or there's a UFO sighting that gains some national attention, such as the Stevensville sightings early last year, then you see more people reporting it and you see more people talking about it. So it looks like there's an increase in the sightings. It may not be a real numerical increase. It's just more reporting of stuff that people hadn't reported before. So I'm not sure that we're seeing a big increase in the sightings, although we may be seeing some.
Do you think that the report that the Chicago newspaper published about the O'Hare sighting, do you think that sort of set a new tone in major media for reporting things straight and without a lot of giggle factor in it?
If we take a look at the history of UFOs, we do see straight reporting. I know CBS News did some in the 1960s, for example, where they reported the Lonnie Zamora sighting from 1964, pretty much a straight news, without laughing at it. And we've seen some national magazines do some very solid reporting. And then we see the stuff where it's the giggle factor. So it's just mood of the specific person, the mood of the editors of the newspaper, or where they happen to be on the spectrum on that particular day. So it may not necessarily set the tone. If we can get the national media to look at this stuff seriously, on a regular basis, then we're going to see an improved tone in the reporting of UFOs, and we may be able then to force some more answers. We did actually get the Air Force to respond to us back in the 1990s as we began to talk more and more about Roswell. They felt compelled to come up with their cockamamie answers for what fell at Roswell, so we can see that sort of pressure does have an effect. But what it does, unfortunately, is create a situation where they throw out more nonsense and the news media says, oh, well, of course, that makes sense to me. And then the next thing you hear, well, the Roswell case was explained by a balloon, even though that explains nothing.
Well, and, of course, the media that reported it that way simply proves that they flunked math because those dummies that report talks about, the dummies that were dropped from balloons, that was 11 years after the Roswell incident. I don't remember. I think it was 11 years. It was many years after. They simply didn't do their math. They didn't count.
But if you watch the press conference where the Air Force colonel is trying to explain this, you can see the reporters aren't buying it. They understand that this answer makes no sense, and it's only later that I'm surprised at this that the media is now reporting that, well, the Air Force explained that as anthropomorphic dummies. At the time, the media did not accept that explanation. You could see the reporters actually in the press conference giggling at the nonsense being spouted, and I'm not sure the Air Force colonel believed it. But that's what they were saying. And now today it's as if, yeah, we all believe that when he said it. They're not questioning it today the way they did 10 years ago.
All right. We have a flash message that's a follow-up to that one that asked you about the barracks at Babylon. And the flash message says, well, Kevin, guess what? Babylon is not visible anymore on Google Earth. It's all blurred out.
I don't know. I don't know what to say to that. I haven't looked at Babylon on Google Earth for a long time. Not too long ago, I was looking at Baghdad on Google Earth, and because I could actually see the building I lived in when I was in Baghdad by zooming in on it. And I haven't looked at Babylon in a long time, so they know more about it than I do at this point.
I'll ask this question, but look, I'm in asking about Babylon, I'm not asking about its current political importance, okay, or its importance in a war on terrorism or any of that. But is Babylon and that area important in the whole field of UFO investigation?
When you go back and you take a look at some of the beginnings, Ezekiel, when he was captured, was taken to Babylon. And I believe, if I remember correctly, I believe that when he talked about seeing the wheel, he was in Babylon when he saw the wheel. If we want to take it into another realm, which would be the out-of-place artifacts, we have what they call the Baghdad batteries, which were these things that were batteries made 2,000 years ago, but they were found at Babylon. They were taken to Baghdad, which isn't all that far from Babylon, but the Baghdad batteries were actually found in Babylon. So there are a couple of things that link Babylon into the UFO field in that way. But in today's environment, I don't think Babylon is as important to understanding UFOs as maybe Roswell is, or maybe Leveland is, or some of the other UFO cases, and I don't mean to focus just on the cases in the United States, because you've got Shag Harbor up in Nova Scotia where they saw the thing fall into the ocean, and Chris Stiles and Don Ledger have done a hell of a job in gathering the documentation from official sources about what fell at Shag Harbor, and the fact that the Soviets were there and the Americans were called in, and the object apparently escaped underneath the water as it got out of the Shag Harbor area. And that's a very important case. So the focus, I think, on UFOs has shifted into the modern era, of course. And those ancient sightings and the airship from 1897, that's interesting stuff. But we move into the modern era where we get some really good information, and that's where we're going to find our answers.
You said earlier that, as far as you're concerned, the UFOs are being piloted by extraterrestrial beings. What has made you come to that conclusion? What leads you to that conclusion?
Science, I guess, basically. If you talk time travel, back in science fiction supposedly is predicated on science. So if you're talking time travel, which really isn't predicated on science or hasn't been, that really moves into the realm of fantasy. And I know that there are some physicists talking about methods of time travel, but it always moves us from the present into the future as opposed to traveling back in time. So the scientific principles don't seem to be there that talk about time travel, whereas we can see the principles that would move us from one star system to another. And yes, I understand the vast distances we're talking about, and I understand that at the speed of light, if you could obtain the speed of light, it would take 4 years to get to the closest star system. But these things are possible, as opposed to, at the moment, travel back in time. We're talking about multiverses now, many, many universes, but we don't really know that they're out there the way we do, that there's extraterrestrial other planets around other suns. So I'm looking at it from what we have in the way of information today, But when I look at the alternative explanations as opposed to the extraterrestrial, I assign them a percentage of possibility much smaller than the extraterrestrial. And anybody who's watched poker on TV and you're watching the odds and the guy's got a 93% chance of winning and the guy gets one card he needs to win, I mean, there's one card in deck he needs and it comes out. So the fact that the overwhelming percentage seems to suggest extraterrestrial doesn't mean that one of these other answers may not prove to be the real answer, but at the moment the percentages seem to favor the extraterrestrial.
Have you seen any evidence anywhere in your investigations, any evidence that you deem to be very credible evidence that extraterrestrials have made contact with humans?
You mean purposely or by accident?
Well, either way. Either way.
There is some interesting cases where people report having seen the creatures or interacted with them. But those are usually single or two or three people together saying that stuff. The abduction phenomenon could be studied scientifically because even if it doesn't involve extraterrestrials, there's some psychological phenomenon going on there that deserves scientific analysis. And some of those cases seem to be interesting, but I think the answer for the abduction phenomenon probably lies in the terrestrial as opposed to the extraterrestrial. But that would be an area where you might see an interaction between the alien creatures and humans, and that might be a place to study. And that was one of the reasons I looked into getting my doctorate in psychology, so I would understand some of these dynamics better than the person just off the street.
All right. You were talking about they seem to be probably more the abduction phenomena seems to probably have more of a terrestrial origin as opposed to extraterrestrial. Let's talk about Men in Black. You've been at this now for over 30 years. Have you run into any information that leads you to think that the stories about Men in Black may be true?
Yes, but, and it's an important but, I think that when people start talking about Men in Black or things like that, it may be other people, other humans doing something not necessarily part of the extraterrestrial. And I say that is, and I'm thinking specifically of the Heflin sighting, the photos taken by Rex Heflin.
Interesting that your phone is cutting out now that we're talking about this.
But Heflin talked about two Air Force officers from NORAD coming and getting the negatives of the pictures. That, to me, would be Men in Black, because the Air Force didn't do that. Somebody else did that, and I don't know whether it was somehow related to the UFOs or it was somebody who wanted to get the negatives and use that as an excuse to take them away from Heflin. I don't know exactly how that transpired.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, and I think we'll have time for maybe one more telephone call if you wish to call in. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on final approach. We only have a little bit less than 9 minutes left. We will take one telephone call, 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Kevin Randall. Now, Kevin, you said as we were going into the break that you mentioned one particular case, and you said that these guys said they were U.S. Air Force, and you said, but you don't think they were. Why do you say that it was not U.S. Air Force?
They claim to have come from NORAD. They made a number of claims like that, and NORAD simply wouldn't have been doing that. It would have been they would have come from the closest Air Force base if they were investigating. I just don't think it was Air Force that was involved in that. I think the Air Force gets blamed for some of this stuff frequently when it wasn't the Air Force doing it. And that kind of feeds into part of the Men in Black mythology. But by definition, these guys would be sort of Men in Black because they were there to kind of intimidate the witness and take the pictures away from him or the negatives away from him. And I just don't think I just don't think that was the Air Force that did that. That's just my gut feeling on that particular case.
We used to hear a lot about Men in Black. We used to hear a lot of Men in Black stories on talk radio and stories published on the internet and so forth. You don't hear much about Men in Black anymore. So one would think either they never really existed, or they've decided their mission is accomplished. They don't need to be doing whatever it was they were doing.
John Keel wrote me a letter a long time ago that said that the phenomenon was reflective, meaning the more attention you paid to it, the more prevalent it seemed to become. And I think we've kind of moved away from the Men in Black so that we've moved away from the ideas that that's really going on. We've moved our research in other directions, and I think that might be part of the problem. We get a lot of stuff about black helicopters, and I know Russ Estes told me at one point that he investigated a case where a woman talked about the black helicopters around her house all the time, and he went over there to investigate, and she lived not all that far from a heliport. So yeah, there's going to be helicopters around, and if you're looking at a helicopter in the sky and the sun's behind it, it's going to look black. So those sorts of things happen, which is not to say that there aren't specific cases where they do happen. It's just an awful lot of the stuff is misperceptions on the part of people.
Yes, I know that's true, but I also know that I have seen and I have ridden in many helicopters, both ours and Russian helicopters, and I have seen one. Here in the Phoenix area once that was black and had no markings on it at all. And so I have no doubt that they exist. I have seen them. I don't know. It was definitely, it was a terrestrial machine. It was a helicopter, As a matter of fact, it was a Black Hawk. Totally black and no markings whatsoever.
If you'd scroll down far enough, on my blog, you'd have come to the Needles UFO crash, 2008, May of last year, and George Knapp from Las Vegas had investigated that, and he got to an airport, and there were like six or seven black helicopters there, and it was part of a training mission and for a special operations group, and he explains most of this stuff. Was it KLAS TV in Las Vegas he
yeah.
worked for? Go to their website, you can see the whole story of the black helicopters. So yeah, there's black helicopters out there, but usually the explanation for them is more terrestrially oriented.
Mm-hmm. Are they allowed to fly with no markings whatsoever on them?
Government can do whatever the hell it wants.
Well, I guess you're right. Come to think of it, that's correct.
The FAA controls this, and they say, yeah, you guys got special dispensation to do that, then, yeah, you can pretty much fly with your black helicopter with the markings. I know the markings on most military aircraft now are painted in a non-reflective paint, and an awful lot of it is the numbers are awfully small, so they're very hard to see, and that's more of a response to the bad guys seeing helicopters in foreign environments when we have the aircraft deployed than it is to fool Americans.
Do you see, now we're racing toward the end of the show, and again, I'm asking because, number one, you are military and have been for almost 30 years. You've been investigating and writing about UFOs for a little over 30 years. You have a doctor's degree in psychology, and you put all that together, with everything that you've seen and everything that you know about this phenomena, do you see any reason for us to have apprehension or fear related to this UFO phenomena for the immediate future? And by immediate, I mean for, you know, the next 10, 20 years.
I don't think so. I look at the totality of it. If it began in 1947, we really have not been harmed by them. And when I say that, I exclude the abduction phenomenon, because if that is extraterrestrially oriented, then there are some people who are being harmed by that specific area of it. But for the most part, I don't see any real danger for the United States or for the planet Earth based on what the UFOs are doing. To me, it's always struck me as if it was graduate students doing research in the field, gathering information about this civilization that's going up in on Earth, and they're doing that. They're gathering their information. They're going back to their home universities to talk about it. I don't really see it as being malevolent at all.
Have you ever interviewed someone who said they had been abducted?
Oh, absolutely. I've interviewed dozens of them, and clearly they are frightened by the experience. Clearly, going on, which may not necessarily be what they perceive it to be, but there's something going on, and this is an area for science to look at, because there is something going on there. Whether or not it's extraterrestrial doesn't make any difference. It should be researched properly, and it hasn't been to this point.
All right, Kevin, I want to thank you for being with us, and I want you to tell people how they can find you on the Internet.
If they can find my blog by just typing in www.kevinrandle, and the Randall is spelled R-A-N-D-L-E, kind of like candle but with an R, .blogspot.com, or they can just type my name in. They can get to it that way, or they can type in A Different Perspective, which is the title of my blog, and they'll get to it that way. So numbers are ways to find it.
All right, kevinrandle.blogspot.com, and there's a lot of good information there. Kevin, what's next for you? You got a new book coming out?
I've been working on a couple of things, and one of them deals with UFO crashes, a look at the totality of UFO crashes from somebody who has no idea what that really means. Crash retrievals, which is the term that Len Springfield had coined.
All right. When is that going to hit the bookstores?
I have no clue, because I haven't finished it yet. I'm still working on that one.
Based on what you've found so far in your research for the book, have we retrieved any?
I think so, yes. But the vast majority of them, and especially the ones in the last 15 years, are probably meteors, bolides, very bright meteors. And there's an awful lot of hoaxes out there, and there's some very interesting cases as well. And this one in Cape Girardeau in 1941 that I think Len Springfield began to talk about.
Okay, we're up against, I wish we had more time. Kevin, stay on the line with me. We got to have you back. We want to hear that story. All right, folks, that's a wrap. Remember what I told you about Thursday and Friday. I've got some really good encore presentations coming your way. I'll be out in Hollywood covering the premiere of Moon Rising, and I'll bring that to you next week. Until next time, that's tomorrow. This is Kevin Smith. So long, everybody.